In the name of God, our Creator and companion on this journey of life. Amen. Last week, Father Bill Fay, standing before us, celebrating the 58th anniversary of his priesthood, launched me on a reflective journey of my own priesthood ordination only 18 years ago this past week. Since I come from a long line of Calvinist clergy who still must be scratching their heads as to why I returned to the Anglican fold, the themes of destiny and predestination were very much on my mind and in my reflections. I don't know that I'm destined to get anywhere close to 58 years of ordained priesthood, but it did cause me to reflect on the relationship between God's will and human choice in our journey through life. Over the last few weeks, we've heard a lot about destiny, especially if you follow sports. From quarterback Drew Brees' comments after the Super Bowl that his team's improbable win, beating some very great odds, was, quote, destiny, it was meant to be, end quote, to a number of similar comments by Olympic athletes after improbable or highly difficult wins of their own. As figure skater Evan Lysacek commented after winning the gold medal, quote, I can't help but think that there is destiny for any Olympic champion in any sport, and I'm ecstatic that this is my destiny. Ironically, both of these athletes, Brees and Lysacek, were well known for their work ethic. Drew Brees, after being cut by San Diego, coming to New Orleans hoping to find a second chance for his career in a city devastated in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, and a team as well seeking to work hard not just for their own glory and achievement, but for the achievement in rebuilding the culture and ethos of a community. And Lysacek, both commentators and other skaters, other athletes commented that no one worked harder and more rigorously and strenuously than Lysacek. Destiny, is it foretold, preordained, fated, or something else? Our readings this morning are filled with the subtexts of intrigue and destiny. From God's pronouncement to Abraham, foretelling what would later unfold for his descendants, their trials and tribulations, to Jesus' pronouncement that he must continue to work because his time is short, despite risk of Herod's wrath. We feel a strong sense of both danger and destiny unfolding. In both cases, the texts were written long after the events themselves had taken place, the bondage of the Israelites and the death of Jesus. So we can be left wondering, how much are the outcomes actually predestined, and how much spontaneity or agency is there in the unfolding of our history? As a sociologist, despite Calvinist roots, I've always been uneasy with the concept of destiny. How much of personal or collective human history is fated, destined to be by a divine plan, and how much is a function of human will? Achievement against sometimes great odds, sometimes outcomes of conflicts that arise when wills collide. If there is a tightly scripted divine plan for our lives, then what is the role or value of human agency, unless simply playing out our assigned role? Here, destiny becomes determinism and, at its worst, fatalism. Yet if we alone create our own destiny, then what is the role of God in the world? Often, references to destiny tend to be made by those who are in a position of victory or who identify with the side of victory or dominance. Sometimes such references can both justify and reinforce one's entitlement to a position of dominance or power, without reflecting on perhaps how certain privileges, such as class, race, or gender, might have factored in to that outcome. At its worst, a rigid belief in divine destiny can become a belief that God is on our side no matter what. Faith slips into certainty, which can lead to arrogance and a dehumanization of others. The Gospel of Luke has strong undertones of divine destiny, also known as predestination, but not in a way that leads to the pitfalls of elitism or arrogance. Luke indeed shows us a path forward to understanding the relationship of divine predestination and human agency. The balance between destiny and agency is clear in two themes that Luke sets forth throughout the gospel and especially prominent in today's readings. First, God's will is reconciliation oriented. As Jesus said, "How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen under her wings?" In Luke, we see that God's plan for reconciliation is universal. We hear the concern that some of the Pharisees have for Jesus, urging him to flee for his life. For Luke, showing the humanity and complexity of the Pharisees, that they were a far more diverse group in their esteem of Jesus, is part of the sense that we all share the same reconciliation and the same potential under the divine wings. The second theme that runs throughout Luke is that human choices and actions, grounded in selfishness and arrogance, are the very things that will put Jesus to death and lead to alienation from God. That it is not a tightly scripted divine plan, but the logical forces of egos and outcomes that result in the precise time and place that Jesus will die. Within Anglicanism, there are probably as many understandings of destiny and predestination as there are Anglicans. Predestination is not something we like to talk about, but it is part of our tradition, but not in a determinist way. If one looks in the Book of Common Prayer, the 39 Articles of Religion at the back, page 871, for those who like to do a little research, it states, "Predestination to life is the everlasting purpose of God." Article 17 starts, "Predestination to life is the everlasting purpose of God." In a contemporary sense, in the words of Episcopal theologians Owen Thomas and Ellen Wondra, quote, "God wills to save all people, to bring them to their fulfillment in relation to God and to one another. God does not will only to save certain persons and reject others. Otherwise, it would undercut human freedom and responsibility and make the mission of the church pointless." This balance between understanding predestination in a broad sense as God's will for salvation and reconciliation for all, and our human opportunity and responsibility to shape history, is what I value in our Anglican tradition. And if my ancestors were here right now, what I would respond to them. Few can compassionately claim that the devastating earthquake in Haiti, and now this weekend in Chile, are God's will. Does a loving God script tragedy? A reconciling God grieves along with humanity, is present in those places of deepest hurt, and seeks to inspire us to put forth sometimes superhuman effort to respond with our compassion, our aid, and our other resources. The need for reconciliation is great in the world. Wherever we turn, there is need, not only for aid, but for building reconciling relationships. Some of you know that I'm doing some research for the Anglican Communion. And perhaps the most important lesson I've learned so far is that charity has an important role, but we limit ourselves to charity if we miss the point. Donating makes us feel good. It reinforces our position of benefactor. But we need to move beyond that to empowering others. One of the most important ways this occurs is when we realize that others have as much or more to give us through our relationship together than we could possibly give. This summer, I had the honor of hearing one of my former students presenting his research at a meeting. He was from a very poor part of Africa and didn't go to school until the age of 9. His first classroom was under a tree. Yet today he has a PhD and a faculty position in a good university. He would be the last to claim that his improbable path was preordained or destined by God. Yet he has taught me how the reconciling love of God stirred hearts and minds and opened doors for him. And he put all he had into making the best of whatever opportunities he had. I've been in awe of his achievement, and I have learned far more from him personally and about his culture than I was ever able to give. He would disagree, and perhaps that's the point of mutuality. Destiny, then, becomes a mixture of divine will and human agency. Divine will calling us to compassion and concern, and human agency representing the choices we make and how we use our time and resources on earth to bring about this reconciliation. We are all part of the brood that gathers under divine wings. To close, given that this is the closing day of the Olympics, I've always had a deep affection for the Olympics. While thoroughly secular, at the same time, there seems to be a profoundly spiritual subtext. At this Olympics, the opening ceremony had been tinged by the collective grief of athletes and supporters and those of us who are watching from afar, from all over the world, for a young luge athlete from the Republic of Georgia who had died on a training run a day earlier. And then a Canadian figure skater's mother died of a heart attack shortly after arriving in Vancouver to watch her daughter perform. Yet the skater performed despite her grief, courage that touched hearts and brought many to tears. The Olympics have their rivalries and conflicts, but they also model aspects of a global village where ideals of competition are balanced by compassion and respect. I'm not going to make theological claims for the Olympics, but perhaps they too might have some role in the divine destiny of reconciling all of creation and the human agency that holds the key to bringing it about. Amen.